If you want to quit your favorite technical gimmick, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 191, entitled Prodigy, because we're going to talk about Star Trek, Prodigy, and other things. I think we'll start with some of the smaller stuff today. Today is Friday, November 12th, the day after Veterans Day. And Shang-Chi became available overnight on Disney Plus, so we'll get a chance to watch that. You know, it did okay in the box office, which was great, but you know, I'm not entirely sure how great it did in relation to some of the other more Marvel canon movies.
I'm sure it did about as well as Black Widow.
I would hope so. I know they made money on it.
Yeah.
But The Eternals was a dismal failure. They're trying to spin it so that it wasn't, but there's all kind. I haven't really looked into it a lot. My son has followed it closely because I remember the Eternals comics, and I was always fascinated by the Eternals comics because I loved Greek and Roman mythology, and the Eternals characters were kind of based on those. Even the names are similar, to infer that these aliens who were protecting Earth thousands of years ago were, you know, who we called Zeus and Athena and Hera, you know, and all the Greek gods and Roman gods. And the movie followed that suit, but part of it, their complaints about that, they pandered a lot to the Chinese audience. So there's a lot of stuff that got either changed or they didn't talk about in the show. It was not a family friendly movie, although they build it as a family friendly movie. I guess a lot of the gods were getting it on. And it was kind of funny because that was one of the articles I did read, and they said that, okay, these guys, you know, what kid wants to play with an Eternals Happy Meal toy? Because they had a tie-in with McDonald's giving away little Eternals figurines in the Happy Meals. And it's like, when they're never going to see this movie and they're never going to understand what the characters are because of all the sex that was in the movie, which is a real, you know, frankly, that's a real departure from the way Disney typically does the MCU universe.
I mean, the portrayal of Tony Stark has been about as controversial as I thought we would see in the MCU. You know, being an alcoholic and somewhat of a womanizer and all of that. I kind of expected that to be about the end of what we could expect of that sort of thing. And really, Robert Downey Jr.'s portrayal of Tony Stark is not near as bad as he is in the comic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the comic, But, you know, even in the comic, all the sex and everything was inferred, whereas in the Eternals, they were actually had sex scenes and stuff. Now, I don't know how much they really showed. You know, was it darkened screen you know, everything like that, but still that's a super big departure from, I mean, they in the comic books Star-Lord and Gamora got it on a lot, but they, you know, they never showed that in any of the movies. So who knows?
And I don't know that I need that.
I don't know that I need that in a superhero movie or show. But, you know, I'm going to go back to what I've said before, and that is, you know, I am kind of over superhero shows. But, you know, being over the... I'm so glad, like, Superwoman or Supergirl
CW
ended. I didn't even watch like the last six episodes. They're on my DVR. I'll keep them because I have all the rest of the season or series. But that show got so convoluted by the end. I was like, this isn't even entertaining anymore. And, you know, I look back and I did enjoy moments of the. I really liked Loki. Loki is the bright spot in, I believe, the MCU universe right now. But, you know, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it had some good episodes, but I look at the corpus of that show and I'm like, eh, it was okay. WandaVision was just terrible. And that's why WandaVision isn't coming back for a second season.
No, WandaVision was supposed to be one and done.
Yeah, but I think they realized that the writing on that was they were hoping that people would watch it just because it was MCU stuff, not because it was good.
Right.
You
I mean,
know.
I don't think you don't go into a project like that and just put it out there to put it out there. I mean, it's not like it's oh, we have an expectation to put out an issue of a comic this month, so we're gonna do it. No, it's not like that. But I think as a project, it was supposed to lead into Doctor Strange 2, and when COVID hit and pushed everything back, it made the effect of what would have come out of that project significantly less important.
Yes. Yes.
So by the time we get to Doctor Strange 2, we're gonna be like, oh, now all this other crap with Scarlet Witch now makes more sense why they set it up
But
this
they
way.
the problem is they changed the Scarlet Witch story. You know, Scarlet Witch was the son of Magneto. I mean, they moved her out of the, you know, 'cause Marvel kind of has two universes. They had the Avengers universe and then they had the Captain America Iron Man universe, or the Shield universe is what I call it, because it was all the characters who interacted with Nick Fury. And so they moved her from the Avengers universe and Vision as well into the Shield universe. And to do that, they ruined a lot of her story. Now they kept certain aspects because, like, they moved her brother Peter, who was Quicksilver, into that universe. But in the comic books and the Avenger universe, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch are the children of Magneto. And they're, you know, they screwed themselves. They could have continued having some amazing event or not Avengers, but amazing X-Men movies, you know, with them as the foils and then turning in. I mean, 'cause they also did the same thing, you know. They took her and they said, we're gonna turn the Scarlet Witch, you know, she'll be evil in the beginning, and then she'll turn and become one of the, you know, a good guy. And that's what happens in the comic books. And part of that is part of the Vision story too, is Vision, and when she meets Vision, it changes her outlook and, you know, all this stuff. And WandaVision, you can see elements of that in the WandaVision show, you know, having children and all that, because all of that happens in the X-Men universe. But it doesn't fit because you lose the significance of who she really is because you don't have that she was the child of Magneto. And also, you don't get the influence of being the child of Magneto, you know, and all of that. I don't know. It's not that I'm a purist in all of this stuff all the time, because I understand it's hard to take things that are written as literature or comic books and necessarily translate them into television and movies. But that one, you're breaking a fundamental part of what makes that character, the way that character acts and their motivations, that it is tough to.
Plus, I think they really wanted to keep the X-Men out of the MCU. Yet there's all this pressure to put them in the MCU. And I think if they were to maintain two separate franchises, they'd have a better shot at making more money.
I totally agree.
But from a in-house studio perspective, that's hard to do.
It is. It is. But I think there could have been a better way to mix it together. You know, because the bigger part of it is they could have just mushed the two universes together and just kind of left it hanging that, well, Charles Xavier School for the Gifted exists in the Avengers universe, and it's just drawn them in. You know, to me, that would have been a better transition than trying to pull specific characters in. And that's part of my issue with the MCU right now. One, they only have a short amount of time until they have to recast with certain characters. So I think they gave up on the whole Iron Man, Captain America.
Me too.
Because, you know, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, they're still young enough to, you know, to believably be the characters they are. And so to say that, you know, they're retiring, you know, those characters after so long. And but then they on the other hand, they come and they go, well, we're you'll see them again, you know. But now we're in this thing where, like, we're going down the path of it. I've never read the Shang-Chi comic books, but I'm assuming they're okay. But why are we? It's an obscure line.
Here's what bugs me.
That's a Netflix version show. Yeah. Is Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
You know, Daredevil and
why make that a feature film? I don't.
Yeah,
know.
or the Eternals, because even the Eternals, that was a limited run comic book series. I think there were two runs, if I remember right. But they were like less than 10 episodes each. I think that might have been six issues each of the comic book. So you're building a movie on 12 obscure comic books that Marvel created.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the reason why I kind of object to this Shang-Chi movie is the Ten Rings is an organization that's associated with the Mandarin, which is an Iron Man foil.
I think you're right. The Ten Rings was also a big part of the Doctor Strange story. Now, I do not own an issue. I mean, if you hadn't figured out, being the big geek that I am, I own several thousand comic books. I was never a Doctor Strange fan. I didn't like the character. I didn't like the way the comic... I might have read a couple of the comic books, but I never, like, was... That's one I'm going to have pulled for me every month and read it. But I know in my collection I don't have any Doctor Strange comic books, and henceforth, you know, even the Iron Man comic books I have, I probably don't have to where the Mandarin was... And the Ten Rings were mentioned in Iron Man. So, because a lot of the period of time when I was reading Iron Man comic books, it was a lot of that interaction where it was Tony Stark against Nick Fury and Stark Industries against S.H.I.E.L.D. And there was very little Captain America in that, even. You know, and by the time they killed Captain America in the late 90s, early 2000s, I wasn't reading Captain America, so...
And how in the world do you not tie in Iron Fist to all of that?
I know. Because that's a direct tie-in to Doctor Strange. You know?
Granted, of the Netflix series, Iron Fist was the weakest.
Mm-hmm.
But...
Now, oddly enough, you know, there some of these obscure comic books I did read, like Daredevil. I love Daredevil. You know, the fact that you had a guy who was a who was injured in an accident. He was completely blind, but his superpower was that he had, like, sonar-like hearing, so he could see through sonar. And he was a lawyer who did a lot of pro bono work during the day. I mean, he was kind of, you know, he was a hero not only as a superhero, but he was a hero from a...
His story is almost as important out of the costume as it
is in the costume. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I also read, you know, Captain America was my favorite Avenger. So I have a lot of his, but a lot of the Captain America is also tied to Sergeant Rock, Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos. When I was a kid, I couldn't get enough of those comic books, and I was buying, you know, older, because those were gone by the time before I was born, they had quit printing those. So I was buying older issues back when those were kind of worthless comic books as old comic books. And so those were like my favorite Marvel ones, except for I really liked the X-Men, and I had a ton of the X-Men comic books, you know. I read a few Thor issues of Thor, and that was a hard comic book to get your head wrapped around, too.
Well, sure, because it's Norse mythology, which is always a tough read as a kid.
Well, it wasn't so much that part of it. I liked that because I liked Greek and Roman mythology.
Sure.
So it's kind of the same thing. It was the comic books I always thought were kind of stilted. The stories were stilted where he was dealing with, you know, modern day people. And they just didn't seem that interesting to me. Now, later on in the 2000s when he retired and his daughter became Thor, you know, and I would say probably a couple years before that, and this is still before the MCU was really the MCU, the Thor comic books I thought were really compelling. They had better writing. You know, all the comic books have good and bad writing. You know, there's very few Marvel comic books or DC comic books, but a good example is, and people will argue with me because, but I always loved the reboot of G.I. Joe, the G.I. Joe comic books, which then, you know, all the G.I. Joe toys that we played with from 82 to 91, that was really a science fiction comic book. There was a little bit of stuff that was modern day, like what was at the time, you know, which was, you know, 80s military technology. But these guys were the elite force and they had access to all this stuff that was science fiction, you know. And Larry Hama ran that comic book from day one till they shut it down, you know, and created all the characters and all that stuff. The thing is even with him as a single guy doing that comic book, you know, from beginning to end, there was good writing most of the time, but there were periods of really bad writing. Like, and you know, I talk with a lot of G.I. Joe aficionados because we collect the figures and stuff in the comic books and stuff still. And every one of them, even though I liked it, but every one of them goes, yeah, when they brought in that Battle Force 2000 stuff, which was before the year 2000, obviously, by about a decade, that's when the toys started to get crappy. You know, because they were reaching, you know, for the ends of science fiction. And that kind of is a beginning of that. But what's even more funny about it is in the comic books, they introduced them in one issue. They went on a mission in the next issue, and they killed them off in the third. So it lasted 3 months within the comic book. And yet, you know, Hasbro had devoted almost a year's worth of updates to the toys, to that, those toys. And so Hasbro made it more significant than it really was in the comic book. But frankly, the writing was bad. And stuff. And, you know, that I think happens a lot more often than not. You know, there were years where Spider-Man sucked. And Stan Lee was involved. It was just bad writing, you know. The storylines were repeats. It's kind of the same thing with how the new trilogy of Star Wars was kind of a repeat of the two other trilogies. You know, new names for the characters, but it was the same plot ideas. Yeah, it was an homage. Yeah. You know what I say about homages.
Well, every time the writing sucks and a project flops, it's because it was an homage. If it were a success, it would be, oh, this is so original and exciting writing, and we'd have no complaints. But because it sucked, they're going to say it was an homage, and we just didn't like it because...
Because it was an homage?
Because it was an homage.
I don't know. I look at it and I shake my head. Well, let's move on from that. We'll talk, I think we'll talk last about Prodigy because we're naming the episode out of it. So what's kind of funny, there's a Forbes article that came out today, or no, yesterday. And it's entitled, Star Trek IV Makes Bold Play to Capitalize on Star Wars Delay. So Paramount is going to do their next, move their next Star Trek movie from, I think they were going to, it's kind of funny what's going on. This is going on not only with Paramount and Disney, but a whole bunch of the different studios who are trying to bring out essentially science fiction platforms or science fiction genre. Yeah, well, you know, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, Star Trek, Star Wars, you know, the universes. And so they're moving from June 9th, 2023, which is, I mean, I hadn't heard a date for the next Star Trek movie yet, to December 22nd of 2023. So they're going to go for a Christmas release, not next year, but the year after, for the next Star Trek movie. And part of that is because, and this is my complaint with Disney, they're not producing enough Star Trek content.
Star Wars
content? Or I mean Star Trek. Star Wars content. Yeah, Disney's not producing enough Star Trek content. Well, maybe that's because they don't own the franchise. But the Star Wars content, and because their next big movie was going to be Star Wars Rogue Squadron.
Which did get pushed back, and I'd be...
Which is now pushed back to 2024.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I'm even questioning whether or not it actually happens. But, you know, the more I learned about that, the less excited about it I was.
It's not based upon the books. It's not going to be, you know, Wedge Antilles being the main character. And
which, I'm relatively okay about, if you want to set it later or whatever you want to do with it. I'm okay with that, but wow, I just you can't use a title like that and just not do it. I mean, that's like if they had billed this Disney trilogy as being the Thrawn trilogy and then
not have Thrawn, yeah, didn't have Thrawn in it. Or you know, just mentioning his name in one, you know, one scene with the Emperor.
Well, Grand Admiral Thrawn will get you, you know.
I struggle with that. Rogue Squadron is Wedge Antilles and Luke Skywalker.
Yep.
And eventually Luke Skywalker got out of it, and it was Wedge Antilles and his squadron.
Yep.
There's no reason not to tell that story.
Well, and again, it would still be disappointing if they included Wedge, but not as disappointing if they didn't include Wedge. But still, because all those were also tied to Grand Admiral Thrawn in some way. All those books were. He was killed by then, but, you know. What I don't understand is Timothy Zahn is still producing quality Star Wars content under Disney, and they're not using any of his stuff.
Dude, bring him on board.
Bring him on board. Let him start writing your prospectuses and your movie.
Even if he doesn't write the screenplay, give him the story credit.
Yep.
And get a quality story, for crying out loud.
Absolutely.
It's not that tough. It's not rocket science.
No, it's not. No, it's not. So, I want to move on from that. Because we have no idea what the problem with the Star Trek movie is. I'm shocked that, because that means It's going to go into production here very, very soon.
And we've heard nothing.
But we've heard nothing about which script they're going to pick, other than the fact that Tarantino's script is out. Well, thank God.
Yeah, indeed.
But there's
two. Are we still talking about Chris Pine?
Right now,
and
Chris.
That whole cast?
Yes,
Chris. Are we talking about?
So they don't know. So there's one movie perspective, which is, and it's not Simon Pegg's movie either.
Correct.
I forget the lady whose name. I think she's mentioned in the article.
And she was known for something else too, and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. Nope. It's not in the article. Wait a minute. Sorry, let me read through this again real quick. Yeah, they don't mention her in this article, but there is a story, and JJ is still involved from a executive producer perspective, which I can't figure out. But it my understanding is that her script is still a Chris Pine...
Kelvin Universe
script, and it might be going back to the one where they were doing the George Kirk thing, because I think that was her script, was the George Kirk time travel within the Kelvin Universe. But you know, and I they have them still, you know, Chris Pine and all those folks are still on contract with Paramount for one more movie, is my understanding.
I thought they had a contract for four. So
and so they've got to use them soon, or they're going to be so old that it won't be believable, you know, because there won't have been enough continuity. Or you would have to push the story out so far into the future in the Kelvin universe to make up for the time, and then you spend half your story kind of explaining what went on, you know, between the end of the Star Trek, The Fast and the Furious, and whatever this new movie is. You know, and kind of like
Did
what...
Did you really not like Beyond?
Oh, I liked Beyond. I loved it. But I like calling it Star Trek, The Fast and the Furious, because it was by that Fast and the Furious director, and right. It was, for the most part, I mean, there were some slow sections in it, but for the most part, it was a Fast and the Furious movie, just in the Star Trek universe. And that's part of what made it really good. You know, but it was also part of what made it not very Star Trek-y.
I agree.
You know, we had lots of starship crashes, but we didn't have a whole lot of Star Trek science. You know, what I call Star Trek science is, you know, there's a lot of technobabble in Star Trek to explain away the sciencey parts, which is what makes science fiction, which, you know, Matt and I've talked about this before, which makes Star Wars more of a space opera, where Star Trek was more science fiction, because they would take real scientific concepts and then they would say, well, they're this advanced and this advanced and this advanced.
But you know what? I think the whole Kelvin Universe set of movies is more
space opera than it is Star. Well, and that's why it doesn't fit that
right.
The Star Trek mold.
To the whole
because movie. even all the new Star Trek series, there's technobabble and, you know... As bad as the burn was explained, there was an scientific explanation for the burn. I mean, and stuff. So it's kind of interesting. Speaking of the burn and Discovery, so evidently Tilly and Book are going to be big characters this season. And that their characters are going to change and grow. I think part of it was, is you know, the characters... outside of Burnham and Book last season, because in reality that they were the main characters, and a little bit of Saru, they gave him a little more presence, but they although they did use a lot of people's names, so I actually now know who the helmsman is, Owokasun. You know, they really didn't, those people had
bit
parts.
Why do they give these characters unpronounceable names now?
Diversity.
It's
diversity. That's one of those, we got to be woke. So, you know, we're going, you know, instead of the black character being, you know, Smith. Ensign Smith, it's we got to give him an African name, even though she speaks with an American or Canadian accent, you know. And, But that doesn't bother me so much. I mean, the having the real names.
It bugs me because
you can't remember who they are.
Their names. I already have trouble with remembering who these characters are because I don't care about them in the first place.
Well, the one that always gets me, but I remember them because of this, is Ensign Reese, who's the communications officer on the bridge. And the reason I remember his name is because he's Ajin, yet his last name is Reese. But to a large degree, it is... That doesn't bother me so much. I know you can't always remember him. Like, I couldn't remember Owokasun forever. But, you know, it does make the realism more... I don't want to say realism. It makes the ability to escape reality and feel like you're involved, you know, you're in the show when they're, you know, it has things that, you know, more than likely would be
throwaway characters,
but well, technically, yeah,
do that.
Yeah. But that I think,
but
that's
recurring cast.
Yeah.
You can do that.
Well, I think that's part of the problem with Discovery. Is one, they have too many. You know, in TOS, you really had four main characters on the bridge crew. You had Kirk, Spock, Scotty, and Bones. And then you had three, arguably five, lesser-known characters who were recurring enough that they were known. You had Rand, Chapel, Sulu, Chekhov,
Uhura.
And Uhura. And Kyle, the transporter guy, because you saw him almost every episode they left the ship. But outside of that...
So much so that they brought him back in Wrath of Khan.
Yes. But outside of that, you know, there weren't... There, you know, outside of the four main characters, you didn't... You know, and really, Uhura, Sulu, and Chekhov. And what people don't realize... is Chekhov didn't come in until the second season. Mm-hmm. Uhura didn't have a name for most of the first season.
Yeah.
And I don't think Sulu did either. He might. I think he might have.
He had a name,
yeah,
only because he was in the pilot as a science
officer. Yeah.
So, I mean, he had a name.
But it wasn't until the second episode that I think they called him Mr. Sulu. Mr. Sulu, take us out or something. But, I mean, you know... they weren't real big characters. Again, it was Kirk, Spock, Scotty, and Bones. Those were your main characters. Star Trek The Next Generation, we got a little bit bigger. You know, we had Picard, Riker, Troy, Crusher, LaForge, and Worf. So we added two people as kind of the main people. And then you had Wesley Crusher and Chief O'Brien, or Lieutenant O'Brien, depending on what day of the week you caught him. And a couple of others who were, though, you know, those recurring characters, but not main people. And that continued kind of that way through Deep Space Nine and Voyager. You had like four really main people and three sub-main people. And, you know, same thing with Voyager. In that show, Voyager was kind of weird because the reality of it was the four main people were not necessarily the captain, first officer. Janeway was definitely one of them, but a lot of the show was around Tuvok, Paris, and Kim. And Robert Beltran's character, I felt kind of got... He had episodes where he wasn't a main character, but to be a main character in every episode, him and Roxanne Dawson, you know, Blana Torres, they weren't necessarily big characters in every episode, particularly in the first season.
I think part of that...
Roxanne or Blana Torres' character became more important because of her relationship with Tom Paris near the end, where they got married and they had a kid and all this. But that show, even if you watch the pilot, you're kind of... Because Chakotay and Blana are the enemy.
Yeah.
The main people are Paris, Kim, Tuvok, and Janeway, you know?
Well, that's the point I was just going to make.
Yeah.
Because they were Maquis, I don't think they ever really came to terms with how they were going to use the Maquis characters.
But
any of them.
But Discovery, even Enterprise, you literally had five main characters, and that was it. You had Archer, Tucker, T'Pol, Mayweather and Reed, and Hoshi Sato is your sixth or your one sub character.
Phlox.
And Phlox, yeah, Phlox.
But he was kind of a second tier character.
That's what I'm saying. Really. Hoshi, she and Phlox each had episodes where they were the main character in the episode, but when you look at the corpus of the series, they were kind of sub main characters. And even Reed, you could almost put there, he's kind of on the bubble. Reed and Mayweather are both kind of on the bubble because the real three main characters were Archer, Trip Tucker, and T'Pol.
And to be honest, I that's where I would draw that particular line.
Yeah.
Reed was not a pivotal character at all, really.
What was weird about Reed is, so Reed was kind of really pivotal. I mean, he was included as being a pivotal character through the first season, but by about the first third of the second season, he was kind of a background character because they had kind of gelled all of the...
He's the one that was like, I'm still getting paid.
Yeah.
That's his story, which I'm sure we've told this story many times. But, I mean, literally, there's episodes where he's just not in them.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm out surfing, I'm still getting paid, but I'm not in it.
Yep.
You know, and... So I do kind of feel like he's not a top tier character.
Yeah. So let's, and then when we talk about Discovery, think about how this. So they, at least they, over the seasons, they've moved top tier characters in and out. So, you know, you had Lorca the first season, undeniably, Lorca was a top tier character in the first season. You had Pike, undeniably. Second season. Undeniably, Georgiou, even though she was introduced in the first season, she was a top-tier character in the third season. Now that we're hitting the fourth season, you know, Saru is now no longer a top-tier character, which he wasn't in the first season, really.
It shouldn't have been.
It shouldn't have been.
Why they brought him from the background to the foreground, I still don't. This is a show that's never made sense to me. How many captains does a show need? I mean, really? Run the list. Lorca.
Well, Lorca, Pike.
Georgiou.
Saru. Burnham. Yeah. I understand.
Tilly, to a certain degree.
Yeah. I understand that they were trying to do something a little different with the thing with... But the problem is... You can't have Burnham becoming the captain by the fourth season when you're trying to do the show around her. But I think they figured out, writing-wise, that she almost has to be the captain for it to make sense. The problem is they haven't really cemented, other than Tilly, they really haven't cemented another top four character or top three or four main character that you're going to build your main plot and your subplots around every episode.
Yeah.
And... you know, which they've already set Star Trek Strange New Worlds up for this. They've set it up where it's Pike, number one, and Spock. There's your three main people. There's a handful. There's four or five other characters they identified as your sub-main cast who might have, depending on the episode, have subplots that go on that they're the main characters of. And then everybody is crewman Dunsel. To use a Star Trek term.
Indeed. And I'm okay with that.
And I am totally okay with that. Because I think
particularly
that's...
after the craziness that has been Discovery.
Yeah.
I just...
But going back, now that we've had this super long explanation, going back, it seems that this season, Tilly and Booker are going to be... along with Burnham are going to be the... At least from what I'm getting... from Variety and some of these other entertainment magazines.
Do you care about Book?
I like the Book character.
I like the character, but I don't
care. I don't really care about him.
About him.
Yeah.
I mean, I just...
I don't care about... There's a lot of characters, though, I don't care about.
But I don't care Discovery. About Burnham, either.
I care about Burnham. I care about Reno.
I do care about Jet Reno is probably... They should have made her a...
Yeah. I care about Tilly.
I do care about
Tilly. I don't care about Stamets. I don't care about Dr. Culber. I don't care about the two new characters they added last season, because I just...
The ghost.
Yeah. And evidently there is a subplot with Stamets and Culber where the ghost...
They're going to make the ghost permanent somehow.
Yeah, well, they're going to make him real somehow, you know?
That's what I meant.
And that's, like, one of the subplots because, you know, it's not an episodic plot. Remember, it's Discovery's part of that seasonal story arc, which is going to be interesting. But I like Discovery. I love the ship. I love the things that I love about Discovery. Well, I love the second season with Pike. He made the show. And that's why I'm so glad that they spun off Strange New Worlds. But, you know, I do like Burnham. I know you don't like Burnham. She is not... The reason I like Burnham is the fact that she struggles with making the right decision. And she, a lot of times, makes the wrong decision and then has to fix it. And I also like the fact that she's not as charismatic as, like, a leader as, like, Pike and Kirk and even Picard.
But that's why the show fails. You don't watch these shows because you want to see characters struggle.
Yeah.
You watch these shows because you want to escape the struggle.
That's true. That's true. Well, the other thing that I dislike about Discovery, I like the show but season four has me being a little pensive about still liking the show. And that's because there's no strong male characters. Unless they step up, you know, I think they're trying to put Book in, and I do like the Book character, but they've got to do a lot of character development on Book. And also, they need to create a better explanation than, hey, I'm trying to get in Burnham's pants, so I'm hanging out. You know?
He's not Starfleet.
No.
What's he doing hanging around?
Yeah.
Lower tier character. Like the Kirk alien chick of the week. That's all Book should be.
Yeah.
And you want to make him a recurring character? Fine. But...
Well, and then, you know, the other explanation is so... I don't know if it's three seasons from now or what, but, you know, there is the short trek. That I thought the guy... I've gone back and watched it, and I think it's the same guy who plays Book... played that character.
I thought that too. I need to go back and watch it.
And but we know that at some point the Discovery is abandoned, and you know, this guy is, after Discovery's AI becomes completely intelligent, and she rescues somebody because there's another intergalactic war. You know, and so I'm curious as to what all that is. And I don't think we've seen the end of the Portal to Forever character, now that they've made it from an object to being a sentient character. I think that will tie in somehow to the crew of the Discovery disappearing.
That is a device to get us to the Section 31 show with Michelle Yeoh, and that's going to be how they'll do that. I see no other reason to bring that guy back.
Well, not the guy, but the use of the portal. Even the
plot device. I there's no reason to go back to it unless it has something to do with your show.
Yeah. Okay, well, we beat that to death. Let's talk about the thing, which...
Well, what will we name the show?
Show after. So, let's talk about Prodigy, which is... Right now, it is the newest of the Star Trek franchise shows. It's geared to get kids and teens hooked into the Star Trek universe. We're... Technically, it's four episodes in, because the first one was a two-parter, but they showed them as one episode. The animation is excellent in the show. I want to say it's a totally... what I like is it's a totally different style than Lower Decks. You know, it's designed so that a lot of detail can be shown. I like some of the things. We know it's set farther in the future than Voyager, but not as far in the future as Picard.
What are you basing that on?
One, I'm basing it upon that the hologram Janeway is wearing an older uniform with the older
But the ship's been sitting around for some undetermined amount of time.
That's true as well. But also I'm determining, I know it's after Voyager because quite a ways after Voyager because the technology is significantly improved.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not Discovery technology either.
I will agree there.
And in this last episode, they also showed the tricorders and phasers for away teams. And they're more reminiscent. They're futuristic versions of like the Cobra head phaser. The tricorder seemed more futuristic than the phasers did. I mean, the phasers looked cool and everything, but the tricorders, they were mostly screen. They're 25th or what, 23rd, 24th, 25th century iPhones.
Before we get too far away from the animation style, there were moments in the first two, three episodes where I felt like the animation was as good, meaning looked realistic enough to pass as Babylon 5 style graphics.
Oh, absolutely.
Where I felt like if they wanted to do a live action character or two,
They easily could have
they
integrated that in.
could have done it
Yeah.
that way.
I think part of the reason they did it animated is I have, so we kind of move on from the animation style and everything. So the kid, the purple kid Dal, who they character who they made is kind of the captain. I don't like the character. He's like all the worst things you would ever find in a teenager, a young teenager.
He is
He's flippant. He has no sense of, there's no common sense in the character. Frankly, there isn't. And every other character in the show has common sense, which is what kills me. And I just don't find him likable. He would, you know, if he were my kid, he'd be like my least favorite kid. People say they don't have favorites, but that is not true. And you know, you love them because you made them, but not because you like their personality.
one go.
As my mom taught me when I was young, there are people you love but you don't like, and he is somebody I don't like. You know, hopefully they'll grow that character and I will like him. I like the Janeway character as a hologram. I have a feeling it's tough for Kate Mulgrew to do that character because she did Janeway for so long, and you see some Janeway-isms in the character, but they've also made the writing in well enough that there's limits to this hologram and how close it is to Janeway. But the two characters that I love on the show are Zero, who is a Medusan, who's a corporeal entity, and he built his own suit out of junk to so that he, because Medusans, when exposed to, because they live in like our dimension and another dimension, assuming that Star Trek is the same dimension we're in. They make people organic beings go mad, and so he built himself a suit.
And by mad, you don't mean like angry, you mean crazy.
Yeah, crazy. And I like the Diviner's daughter, and I don't think they've given her a name other than the Offspring. That's what they, the Diviner is the main antagonist in
Villain.
the show. And but her character is kind of endearing. She doesn't fit in with her father and
she doesn't fit in anywhere yet.
And she doesn't fit in with these people, but she tries to reach out, and then she's rebuffed because Dal is just a dick. But some of the other characters try to be nice to her and stuff, and you know, it she's the character who has already grown, from my opinion, and from the first episode to technically the fourth episode, which Matt hasn't watched yet, but he will. And everything. It's really, I like the character. And I like that. So there's a character called Rock, and she's a little girl and has this high-pitched little girl voice and acts like a little girl, but she's giant and she's covered in like a hard carapace. And so everybody assumes that she's like a, you know, one, that she's male, but two, that she's like this big tough baddie and she's, you know, a little kid. And I really like that character. The Tellarite, who's the engineer type guy, he's okay. He's kind of there for comic relief. Because again, this show appeals to adults, but it was definitely, unlike Lower Decks as an animated series, which is an adult animated cartoon, Prodigy is shown on Nickelodeon. It's for kids. But what I do like about the writing for the show so far is that the writing has not been like little kid-like stories.
Yeah, no, I will agree with that. But there is one thing that you haven't mentioned yet that I'm waiting to see how this plays out. This is a starship. I mean, even Voyager, if it's the same size as Voyager...
So I don't get the opinion, just based upon, particularly as you watch, I said, you have not watched the latest episode. I don't think the Protostar, which is an NX series ship, so it means an experimental model, or the idea is that NX, if it's successful, becomes the first ship of the line in a new type of ship. I get the impression the Protostar is smaller, much smaller than the Voyager, and can be crewed by a much smaller crew. And that's part of the reason why there's the hologram on it. But even, because you've seen this episode, and spoilers ahead, folks, it doesn't have a dedicated shuttle. Well, it has a shuttle bay, but there's no shuttles in it because it has a special replicator dedicated to replicating shuttlecraft and other away team vehicles that might be necessary. And they show it, well, in the first episode, when they discover the Protostar, it's landed on a planet. And this latest episode, they landed on a planet. And it has landing gear. And, you know, if you look at it, the scale of it versus the crew, because they use a ground vehicle that they replicated to come out, it's much smaller than Voyager. I would say that it's probably, its maximum crew complement is not much more than 50 people.
But even 50 people... You're talking about crew functions that these four or five cartoons can't possibly do.
Well, and that's why they have the Janeway hologram. She's supposed to do some of that for them. And it may be much less, because if you remember in the first episode...
I mean, it's a training vessel, so...
Yeah, when they got on the ship...
I get that.
The crew quarters were, other than the captains, were all bunks in a barracks-type room.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I said 50 people, but it could be anywhere from 20 to 50 people.
You get what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and they
haven't come across this yet, at least... Yeah.
They did make that comment in the first episode too about, you know, you'd at least need 12 people, or you'd have to have so many arms to you know, to man the ship. And that's when the hologram pops on and stuff. So I you know, we're early in the show. It's a 20 minute show per episode.
Here's the other thing. What's the point? I mean, are we rehashing Voyager where we're trying to get back to Federation space?
I don't think we found out what the point is, because there's things that they are alluding to, like, and when I say alluding, like, real alluding to, like, there's some reason why this ship is important to
both sides of this, the antagonist and the correct. Protagonists.
And particularly, the diviner, why he knew he had the ship, but how come he forgot where it was? And then why does he want it so bad?
I think he actually had it. I think he was looking.
Yeah, I think he was looking for it.
He knew it was on the planet, but the whole idea behind the mining
was to find it,
to look for it.
Yeah. And then how did, we haven't found out how it got there, what happened to the crew that was on it, if it was even crewed. Why is it so far out of Federation space? I mean, there's all kinds of, and I think that's something they're going to develop over time.
But my fear is they have no idea how to answer any of those questions
I think they do. I think that we'll find out some of those answers by the end of the season, which means by November 18th.
I would bet not.
Hold on a minute. I got to pull up my VPN so I can go look at some information at home. Excuse me.
I'm not overly encouraged by what I've seen thus far of the complexity of the storyline. I think they just threw it together and said kids will love it, and that's all they care about.
See, I don't think so. I think there was more thought about it. So, I mean, next week Discovery starts. You realize that next Thursday is November 18th. Discovery starts. So Prodigy still runs through the 18th. Obviously, Discovery's on Thanksgiving Day, but not Prodigy. Oh, so Prodigy. That's weird. Hold on a minute. So there's 10 episodes in Prodigy, and it looks like when Discovery starts, Prodigy goes on hiatus and doesn't pick back up until January. Because it says, so the next episode next week is episode 5. Episode 6, according to the information I have, says it starts in 2 months, 7 in 2 months, 8 in 2 months, and then 9 in 2 months, and then 10 in 3 months. Which would jibe with, it ends when Picard picks back up.
Kids are going to care about this over the hiatus.
They are. I think it's a mistake not doing it all over Christmas. But, a lot of TV shows kind of run reruns. On mainstream television, Christmas, they preempt regular series and show Christmas shows. Or they will show reruns over, that break, because they know people will be going to Christmas parties and family outings and all kinds of stuff. So that,
it's just bad timing.
Yeah.
Someone didn't look at a calendar.
Yeah. But, and that's what I said. I was telling Matt earlier before we started recording that this episode 4 is actually technically kind of a two-parter. There's a cliffhanger at the end that's not going to be answered until the episode next week. And I'm assuming they're going to resolve that. And then we're going to have a break, and then they'll pick up with kind of a new storyline. So we're going to see half the series now, and then in January, we'll see the next half. Because it says in 2 months, so actually, let me run the calendar out to... Well, and what's strange is, it picks back up on the 6th of January. What is strange is that they're running Discovery all the way through. But that information is probably based on the fact that people will take time out during the holidays and watch Discovery. Adults will. Because that's a mistake a lot of television has made over the years, and they still make the mistake where streaming services have realized that people, when they're on vacation, they want to be able to watch new shows, new content. Yeah. You know, I haven't looked. The last season of Lost in Space might be coming out over Christmas.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, Thanksgiving even maybe.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I don't either. I have to go look that up later. But that being said, so we're gonna see a a break here, you know, through the Christmas season until January 6th with Prodigy, which isn't really that long when you really think about it. Lord, you know, back when I was a kid in the 80s and we were watching G.I. Joe and Transformers and GoBots and all those television cartoons that were tied into to selling toys, they would, right before Thanksgiving, all new episodes would stop, you know. On all those shows, they would still show them every day, but they were reruns from earlier in the season, and sometimes even reruns from earlier seasons, because they knew that people were you know, spending less. Potentially, kids would end up spending less time watching the show, so they didn't want to not have new content for like in January when everybody went back to school and kids were looking forward to something to watch after school. So, right now, I mean, my overall impression of Prodigy is it's got potential. There are characters I like. I've enjoyed watching it so far. We'll just have to see how it goes.
I don't hate it, but I don't like it either.
Well, it's what did you say before? If it weren't Star Trek, you wouldn't probably watch it.
Yeah, exactly. If it were just called Prodigy, I wouldn't watch it.
Yeah.
But they slap a Star Trek
moniker in front of it.
Front of it, and I'm going to have to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same arguments that I've had
with some of the Star Wars shows, yeah.
Well, even Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, if it didn't say Battlestar Galactica.
Anything else, and I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah.
At least not first run.
Yeah.
You know, now knowing what I know about it, I would go back and watch it, but... You don't have to call that Battlestar Galactica. You could have called that anything else.
Yep. Yep. Well, I think we'll wrap the show up here. We want to hear from you, our listeners, and we really appreciate you listening. So please send us some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. Or visit our website at www.gizmosapiens.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
Listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.